This is the Hasidic Story Project with Barak Holman, podcasting from Jerusalem, Israel. This podcast is sponsored by listeners just like you. To become a supporter of this podcast, please go to HasidicStory.com. HASIDIC Story.com.
You'll never know. You'll never know. Shalom Aleichem, my sweetest friends. It's always such a pleasure for me to sit down and start recording the stories. And this week I have two stories for you, Be'ezrat Hashem. But before we begin, I want to dedicate this podcast episode to the continued success and safety of our soldiers wherever they are in battle, the refuah shlema of everybody who's been injured or is sick, the returning of all the captives, all the hostages already, Be'ezrat Hashem, whole and complete. And God willing, the continued unity of the Jewish people here in the land of Israel and all around the world. You know, my sweetest friends, here in Jerusalem, we have a lot of beggars. There's beggars in the shuk, in the marketplace. There's beggars that come around all the shuls, tea, school, and mitzvahs. And for some people, this is really their profession. This is what they do. They beg. And one day, there was a poor beggar that came to a small town somewhere in Ukraine. And he knew that every now and then you could run into a group of beggars. And if the beggars were generous, cared about one another, they would form kind of a beggars' union, where everybody would go out and help each other begging, and then take all of their money and pull it together, and then split the amount of money that they made. And of course, they would set aside maaser, 10% of their earnings, and give it to their less fortunate colleagues who were either too sick to go out, or for some other reason were not able to collect money. And of course, it's well known that only a person who's gone hungry can understand what it is for another person to be hungry. And the local beggars, they appreciated how hard it was to be a beggar, especially for a stranger. And so they offered him to have a chevruta, someone who would go along with him on his first trip of rounds. And the two beggars are going around knocking on doors, and they're collecting a few coins here, another small coin there. And then they come across a particularly large mansion, very impressive house. And the visiting beggar, he was sure that they were going to go there and get a very nice donation, and maybe even a meal. But to his shock and surprise, his chevruta, the other beggar who was walking around with him, simply passed by the mansion without even looking behind. So the visiting beggar says to the other beggar, "What's going on here? How can you not go to that mansion there?" And the beggar says to the visiting beggar, "Yes, it looks like a very nice house, but inside is not a very nice man. It's true he's the richest Jew in the whole town, but not only will he not give you a coin or a meal, he won't even give you the time of day." And the visiting beggar says to the local beggar, "You know, I've been traveling around for many years, and I never once met a Jew as cruel as you say this Jew in the mansion is. I'll bet you that I'll be able to get something out of him." And he says to the local beggar, "You know what? Shabbos is in a few days. I'm going to get him to invite me to stay with him for Shabbos." And this beggar, the local beggar, started laughing so hard. But when he got back to the beggars' union, to their headquarters, and shared that the visiting beggar was planning on going to the house of the meanest Jew in town, they all started laughing so hard they fell on the floor. The head of the beggars' union, he says to the visiting beggar, "Listen, this rich Jew in the mansion that you think you're going to go to for Shabbos, he is so cold-hearted. If he invites you for Shabbos, we'll give you half of all the money we collected this week." So the visiting beggar says to the other beggars in the union, "I have one favor to ask of all of you. I need you to help me in order to succeed in my mission. When you go around begging, let the wealthiest donors overhear that there's a new beggar and he found a buried treasure. And he needs a serious businessman to help him figure out what to do with this treasure." And one of the other beggars said, "Oh, that's great. We can say that you were traveling in the forest and there was probably some treasure buried by robbers from many years ago and they died and you just happened to discover it." And then the visiting beggar says, "Yes, that's great. And then if they ask you any more information, you just say, sorry, that's all I know." So the local bakers thought this was going to be fun. And as they went around knocking on the doors of their regular customers, they made sure when they went to the homes of the wealthiest people that they would say that there was a visiting beggar and he found a buried treasure and he doesn't know what to do with it. And for some reason, the wealthy Jews got so excited by hearing this information, they gave extra money to the local beggars. And they said to them, "Ask your friend, the visiting beggar, to come visit me. I can help them figure out what to do with that treasure." Because, of course, all the wealthy Jews who were involved in business, they knew that this simple beggar wouldn't understand what he had. And what would he know what to do with jewelry and gold and diamonds and all kinds of things that he found in that buried treasure? But they, as sophisticated businessmen, they would know what to do with it, and of course, they could give him a sum of money that was worth much less than all of the treasure that he found, and they could make a great profit. It'd be a win-win situation for everyone. So when the beggars saw that the rich people were excited by this, they continued saying it again and again, because of course, they were benefiting from it, they were getting more money. And it was fun. Normally, people would get upset at them, or give them a frown. But here, when they said there was a visiting beggar, and he had a huge fortune that he didn't know what to do with, the eyes and ears of all the Jewish business people in town perked up. And the visiting beggar, he found himself being treated now as an honored visitor to the town. Many of these wealthy Jews invited him to their house for a meal. And they would also give him a little bit of money, and he didn't even need to go about begging. When the wealthiest Jew in town, the miser, who wouldn't even give a beggar the time of day, he heard this rumor about a visiting beggar that discovered a huge treasure buried in the forest, and that's what brought him to town. He became very curious. Now the visiting beggar, he had a plan. Just before Shabbos, he went and knocked on the door of the mansion of the wealthiest Jew in town. And the maid answered the door, and she sees a beggar standing there. And she says to him, "Get out of here. We don't like to be bothered by beggars like you." And he said, "But please, it's almost Shabbos, and I have nowhere to stay, and I don't live here. I'm a stranger." The maid, who had clear instructions to turn away all beggars, she said, "Listen, this is not a hotel. You can't just stay here. I don't care if you don't have a place to stay." But then the wealthy Jew, the owner of the house, he heard the commotion at the door, and he saw the visiting beggar. And he said, "Tell me, my friend, are you the visiting beggar that people say found a buried treasure in the forest?" And he said, "Yes, that's me. I know where there's a buried treasure, and I need help figuring out what to do with it. I'm sure that you would be happy to have me for Shabbos, wouldn't you? People tell me that you're such a good businessman, and you have such a kind heart." When the maid heard this, she started laughing. A kind heart. The rich man started thinking what he could do with this treasure that's buried in the forest. And how he could buy it for cheap from a beggar that wouldn't be able to value its worth. And all of a sudden, he becomes very kind. And he says, "Come in, my friend. It's almost Shabbos. There's no time to talk about business now. You'll be my guest for Shabbos. And Motzei Shabbos, we'll talk about how to solve your problem." And then the rich man gave the beggar one of his clean white shirts, a coat, and a top hat. And the two of them went off to shul. And the rich Jew had a special seat where the wealthy people in shul sat, and he asked the visiting beggar to come please sit next to him amongst the wealthy people. And the other wealthy Jews are looking at the miser, thinking, "Why is it him that gets to host the beggar? We all wanted that buried treasure. Him, the miser, who won't share with anyone?" But the miserly wealthy Jew, he just sat there next to the beggar with a big smile on his face, basically saying, "Aha, I beat you all." Of course, everybody who sees the beggar dressed in beautiful clothes, they go over to him, they say, "Shalom Aleichem, good Shabbos." They shake his hand, and eventually the union of local beggars comes into shul. And who do they see sitting in the front of the shul with a white shirt and a coat and a top hat, sitting next to the wealthiest Jew in town? To their disbelief, it's the visiting beggar. And he just turns around and gives them a big smile, and he whispers, "I told you so." Amongst the group of the Union of Beggars, they were talking, they were saying, "We can't wait to hear how he pulled this one off." And after davening, the rich man and the visiting beggar go back to his house, and there's a sumptuous meal, the likes of which the visiting beggar had never seen in his entire life. And he was eating foods that tasted so good, and they were fresh and warm. And the two of them started discussing business matters and Torah matters. And it turns out this visiting beggar had traveled quite a lot and met many people, including many successful businessmen that the miserly Jew had heard about. And he was very impressed with the beggar because he knew about their businesses, and he knew about politics, and he knew about history, and he knew about the Gemara and Halacha. And the miserly Jew says, this beggar is a very interesting person. And Shul, the next morning, the wealthy Jew was given an aliyah, who was brought up to the Torah for the reading. And after, of course, he pledged to donate a large sum of money to the shul. And people were so shocked to hear a donation to the shul from this miserly Jew. Except for paying whatever local fees he had to pay to the Jewish community, he never donated anything. And all of a sudden, the miserly Jew felt so good about himself. He says to the gabbai, please call up my friend here. He's visiting from out of town. And so they call up the visiting beggar, and he gets an aliyah. And when it comes time, when they give the mishaberach, the prayer for health and success after the aliyah, the miserly Jew says, and I'll donate the same sum that I offered for my aliyah, for my friend who's visiting from out of town. People almost fell off their chairs. They came back. They had the second meal, and eventually the third meal. They came Motzei Shabbos, and they made Havdalah. And now the miserly Jew, he says to the visiting beggar, okay, my friend, let's sit down and talk about your buried treasure. I'm very excited to learn about what you found. Please, you have to tell me where it is and what exactly is in the treasure box. And the beggar says, what are you talking about? I don't have any treasure. And the miserly Jew, he says, come on, this is not the time for joking around. We have business to take care of. Let's go. Tell me about the treasure, the buried treasure. And the visiting beggar said, I didn't say that I had a buried treasure buried in the forest. I told you that I have a buried treasure. And I did find a buried treasure. And then he took his hand and put it on the heart of the miserly Jew. And he said, my sweetest friend, the buried treasure that I discovered is right here in your heart. And all of a sudden, something changed in the miserly Jew. And he said, the treasure is in my heart? The visiting baker said, yes, I've been traveling around for many years, and I've been fortunate in my lifetime to discover many such buried treasures in the hearts of many miserly, wealthy Jews, such as yourself. These treasures have been buried for so long that their owners completely forgot that they existed. But Hashem gave me the zchut, the merit, to travel around and dig up these buried treasures that have been covered in dust and dirt and grime and have been neglected and sitting untouched, sometimes for decades. And let me tell you, my sweetest friend, the treasure that you have in your heart is worth much more than any gold or precious stones you could ever find buried in the forest. And all of a sudden, the wealthy Jew's heart really did start to melt, and his anger disappeared, and he sat there and listened to the visiting beggar with an open mouth, shocked at what he was saying. And then when he understood what the visiting beggar was saying, he took the visiting beggar's hand and he said, you're right, my friend. I've been blind to the opportunities that Hashem gave me to do good and to give tzedakah. When I gave a pledge to donate money to the shul today, I felt so good. I haven't felt that good, maybe in my whole life. And having you over my house as my Shabbos guest, it gave me such pleasure. Something I haven't felt, also maybe in my whole life. And the visiting beggar said, now that I've revealed the buried treasure that I came to reveal, I'll be on my way, my friend, to unveil more buried treasures. The former miserly wealthy Jew, he said to the visiting beggar, you are now an honored guest in my home. Anytime you come here, my home will be your home. And now you've taught me what to do with the great wealth that Hashem blessed me with. And the next day, the visiting beggar had disappeared. For a long time, people talked about the amazing discovery that he had made, because this miserly Jew became the biggest donor to all of the Jews in town. He would give money for weddings, and he would give money for soup kitchens, and for Torah institutes, and for shuls, and for cheders, and for helping anyone in the Jewish community that needed anything. And of course, his home was always open to guests. And when the other businessmen who also wanted to buy the treasure from the visiting beggar saw how joyous this wealthy Jew was, they concluded that he truly had made a good deal. And the wealthy Jew would say, it was the biggest bargain I ever bought in my entire life. The visiting beggar truly helped me discover a buried treasure worth more than gold and precious gems and diamonds. have one more short story for you. There were once two businessmen that were in business together, and their wives helped them in business. And one of the wives was more active in the business and knew it better than the other wife. And since all four of them were essentially business partners, one day the wife of one of the businessmen, who was the one that was an expert in the business and understood it better than everyone, she says to her husband, "What are we wasting our money for? We don't need them. You and I in business will make more money than we ever could all four of us together. I know this business better than her, and she could never succeed on her own. Let's go into business together." And the husband says, "Okay, fine." So they break up the partnership, and each couple decided to run their business of trading on their own. And after a short amount of time, the merchant whose wife had assumed that kochi ve'otzem yadi asal edechal hazeh, that my power and the might of my hand can make me rich, they noticed that the other couple, who didn't work as hard and weren't as smart, were making more money, while they were constantly losing money. And the wife who had suggested the breakup of the partnership became so jealous and envious, she went as far as to hire two false witnesses to say that the other woman had been unfaithful to her husband, and as a result, they were obligated to get a divorce. And the Beit Din trusted the witnesses, and they declared that the couple indeed had to divorce because the woman was unfaithful to her husband. Now, this woman knew that this was all a lie. Her husband was very confused. He didn't want to divorce his wife. But if the Beit Din said that they had to get divorced, they didn't have a choice. Then the falsely accused wife, she says to her husband, "Would you please come with me to the Apter Rav, Rabbi Avraham Yoshua Heschel?" And he said, "Yes, of course, let's go." Now the Apter Rav, he was known as the Ohev Yisrael, the lover of his fellow Jews. And he had Ruach HaKodesh, he had divine inspiration. And the second that this poor woman came in and stood before him and told him her story, he knew that she was telling the truth. But was it possible, just on a person's Ruach HaKodesh, to undo a ruling by a Beit Din, by a halachic court, after it had accepted the testimony of those two witnesses? Of course he knew that it wasn't. Because as holy as the Apter Rav might have been, facts are facts, and intuition is intuition. But he knew 100% that this woman was innocent. And so he calls his son, Rabbi Yitzchak Meir, and he said, "People assume that I'm a tzaddik, and they come to me, and they give me their pidyon contributions for tzedakah. Now I want you to go out and announce that everybody has to stop coming to me and giving me money for tzedakah. Not one penny more. Because clearly my Ruach HaKodesh, my divine inspiration, contradicts the laws of the Torah as decided by a Beit Din, and my Ruach HaKodesh cannot nullify what happened in the Beit Din." And so, Rabbi Yitzchak Meir went around and said, no one is allowed to come anymore to his father, the Apter Rav, the Ohev Yisrael, because obviously his Ruach HaKodesh is wrong. The Beit Din decided something, and his divine inspiration saw something else. And as soon as the false witnesses heard that this tzaddik, the Ohev Yisrael, was such a great tzaddik that he could see straight through their lies, they came to the Apter Rav and they told the tzaddik that they had lied in order to ruin an innocent woman's life just for money. And the second that they admitted that they had lied and the Beit Din had mistakenly accepted a false testimony, the Apter Rav turns to his son and he said, "Go back out and announce to the town that people can return to me and bring me their tzedakah so that I can daven for them and give them advice. Because clearly now, my Ruach HaKodesh is in harmony with the laws of the Torah." You know, stories like that, my sweetest friends, I love stories like that. The pure honesty, no ego of a true tzaddik. Some people, if you would say to them, "Take away your honor, take away the respect that people give you, take away the money that people are giving to you," they would do anything to hold on to it. But here, for a great tzaddik like the Ohev Yisrael, even just to say the words, the Apter Rav, it's truly an inspiration for me, and I hope it is for you as well, my sweetest friends.
la la la.
Thank you so much for listening. As always, I want to thank all the contributors, everyone who contacts me, sends me cups of coffee, the monthly, yearly, one-time supporters, all of the messages from children and parents. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. And should you want to give a contribution to the podcast, all you have to do, my friends, is go to my website, HasidicStory.com, and there you'll see a link to become a supporter. There's all kinds of ways to contribute, and every contribution is greatly appreciated. And usually used for either buying matzot for Pesach or for supporting the meals where we have lots of Shabbos guests. Thank you for listening, my friends. Please keep on sharing. And until next week, take care of yourselves. Sei gesund. Tiskul and mitzvahs.
Ha 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 ha